SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three, about 15 in, and Nicole Russo is joining us from the Daily Racing Forum to kind of wrap up week one, book one of the Keeneland sale. Before we do that, I want to slip in. All week I've been meaning to make sure everybody's aware of the situation with Nakila Black, who was injured about 10 days ago at the Eastern Idaho State Fair in Blackfoot. An accomplished rider, a very accomplished rider, and the horse basically effectively somersaulted, and severe spine damage as she's paralyzed from the waist down, and there's a couple of different fundraising opportunities. There's the GoFundMe. I'll send out the links, but if you want to look into it easily yourself on a search, Nakila, N-I-K-E-E-L-A, Black. There's also at the National HBPA site, you can always help and identify where your donation is headed, nationalhbpa.com/donate. Now, there's also the donate drop-down. She's doing pretty well. She's headed to Craig Hospital for rehab, a pretty renowned facility. She works as an attorney, actually, when she doesn't ride. And very tough. And on the upside, when it comes to these jockey injuries of late, nice to see video Kendrick Carmouche. After his surgery, and he's going to be out 4 months, but he was up and walking the halls. And the most remarkable footage I saw this week, if you didn't see it, Marlon St. Julian up on a horse. Astounding. I don't know what to say. It's amazing. Amazing. The courage of these people is just can't be fathomed by those of us on the ground. Nicole Russo, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks, Steve. I completely agree with you, and thanks for that update on how people can help these riders.
Well, it's a special, takes a special brand of individual to not just, it's one thing, it's one thing to go out and ride and get hurt and recover, to go back out and to just be determined. It's astounding to me. I just can't be appreciated enough. We can't appreciate you coming back after starting the coverage back on Monday, and the action started a little bit slowly on Monday, and then it was literally an avalanche of money. Ridiculous what went on here since we talked on Monday.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of a typical arc for a sale. As you said on Monday, not that there weren't seven-figure horses, not that, when at the end of the day, the average price, and that wasn't very good. I mean, the numbers were all very solid, but it did feel to me a little bit atmosphere-wise, like, people were testing the threshold and kind of, testing, feeling out other bidders. And then the sale really found its legs on Tuesday and continued with incredibly strong momentum from there. And I think that's very typical that at the beginning of a sale, people are kind of testing out what the limits are. And then as everybody kind of settles in and begins bidding with a little more confidence, it'll build steam. And that's certainly what we saw, especially at the top of the market. Through the 4 days of this year's expanded book one, we have 26 yearlings, sold for seven figures. Not only is that double the 13 yearlings to do so during the entire sale last year, this is the most sold at this price point since, you know, before the recession, since 2007 and before. So it's a really a healthy top of the market there.
Well, and we saw consistent offering from headliners. American Pharoah, the most interesting portion of that story. However, what Warfront and Curlin and Medaglia d'Oro, Uncle Mo and Tappet, what they were doing, Empire Maker, on a daily basis, the engines on the train here were just consistent. And when, you know, not just the 26 seven-figure earners, but the group of horses, I saw where Oppenheim tweeted yesterday, interestingly, the exact same number of $500,000 to $1 million sellers as the four sessions a year ago.
Yeah, and, you know, within that group, again, you know, a strong middle market at this sale, too, I think. The buyback rate was improved a few ticks. The median was improved compared to, you know, comparable sessions last year. I feel that's an indicator of a strong middle market. Certainly that 500,000 to a million range, you know, the upper end of that middle market. And right up there, I think we did expand the number of horses sold for, you know, say between 750,000 to 950, kind of flirting with that seven-figure range. You know, and some of these horses were in the ring for six, seven, 8 minutes. I mean, it was very competitive bidding. You know, you'd see three or four people locking horns on some of these horses in the final stages of bidding. It just, you know, it felt like a very good, competitive, vibrant market. And some of these stallions that you mentioned, you know, Uncle Mo had a terrific sale with a couple of seven-figure horses and several others in that high six-figure range. Curlin finished with three seven-figure horses. Empire Maker with one from, again, as we've talked about this year, his return U.S. crop of yearlings. Into Mischief, a leading juvenile sire recognized by the market with his first seven-figure yearling. And then up at the top there, of course, you know, American Pharoah, three seven-figure yearlings, brings the total number of horses, also counting last year's weanlings, from his first crop to sell for seven figures up to eight. He's averaging more than $500,000 with his yearlings worldwide right now. I mean, obviously, he earned it on the racetrack doing something that hadn't been done in almost four decades, but, you know, the market really responding to him in a way that it doesn't respond to first-year sires, phenomenal results continue for him. And of course, up at the top, Warfront and Medaglia d'Oro, five seven-figure yearlings for each of them. Warfront currently leading the sale by average price, Medaglia d'Oro leading all stallions by total gross receipts, continuing a very, very strong year for them.
Got to mention the buyer front, who's been the most active. And early in the week, the presence of Sheikh Mohammed, who then was, I think, planning to go to the World Equestrian Games for the endurance race, which is his kind of his hobby away from the racetrack. There's actually a funny story with that, right? The endurance horses went, half of them went in the wrong direction, and they had to restart the race. The presence of Godolphin, 22 head, averaging 860,000. Sheikh Hamdan, Muhammad's brother, 19 purchased for 650,000 average. So between the two of them, $31 million in 41 purchases.
Yeah, and of course those entities buy every year. Of course, Godolphin was buying last year, but Sheikh Mohammed attending this sale himself for the first time since, you know, a couple of the Darley representatives believed it was about 2010, the last time he was here in person. Incidentally, the last time the World Equestrian Games were held in the United States, following at the Kentucky Horse Park that year. Sheikh Mohammed being here really just seems to, add to the, kind of the intensity of their bidding, you know, because he had seen the horses himself. He had gotten excited. Of course, you know, he's a horseman first and foremost, and you know, we got a couple of times in the week, including on a $2.2 million American Farrow colt who opened the action on Monday. Coolmore and Godolphin, you know, longtime commercial rivals, locking horns in some of these slugfests, you know, bidding for these yearlings, you know, of course, not to the level of the market in, you know, the 80s and 90s, where you might see even eight-figure prices, but, you know, still a really healthy, competitive bidding war, you know, for the current market. Godolphin last year, under some new leadership in the bloodstock front, began breaking with a, you know, kind of a longstanding practice of not buying young stock by stallions from the rival Coolmore group. Meanwhile, Coolmore frequently buys yearlings by its young stallions to help keep the market buoyant, as well as to go out and acquire racehorses for themselves. So with Godolphin, you know, kind of coming back into line on Coolmore stallions, you would have to think it would cast these two international powers as bidding rivals for horses by, you know, by American Farrow from the first crop of a Triple Crown winner. And that's exactly what happened. The two of them had, you know, about, I'd say, a 7 or 8 minute slugfest in the final stages on the $2.2 million American Farrow colt, who's the second most expensive horse sold through book one. So really just kind of a fun and exciting thing to witness.
Couple of other purchasers that I thought merited discussion, and the SF Bloodstock Starlight West partnership, they were a force here, book one, 11 purchases, and that kind of stood out to me. I brought up Tom McGreevy and Michael Stinson earlier today with John Secura, as it happens. Also got a note that China Horse Club, the Maverick team, they bought another 7 horses together. So the a lot of the partnership stories that we've been following, Viola and Rapoli, we saw them sign a couple of tickets. I thought that the buy and sell trade, I brought this up the other day, Nicole, the curious, not curious, but the practice of those that were busy selling a few and then turning right around and buying a few. And that included Don Adam, Cortland Farm, and it included Mandy Pope. It included Dennis Albaugh. There were a lot of really fascinating stories that kind of drove the sale these 4 days.
Yeah, a lot of things going on. As you mentioned, you know, the buying and selling, you know, Stone Street Farm was another one participating on both ends there. A lot of these, you know, many of these operations, particularly those that build up these outstanding broodmare bands where that is the foundation of their business, many of them will say, you know, gee, we're going to sell colts out of these mares, you know, to keep our operation commercially viable, and we'll retain the fillies and race them ourselves, and, you know, and keep stocking the pond that way. That's exactly what Stone Street has done. You know, Stone Street selling a couple of 7-figure colts over the course of book one. You know, the Albaughs, that, you know, discussed with them, they are chasing classic success, and they said, well, we'll make the, you know, kind of difficult decision to sell this very good-looking filly out of Miss Macy Sue, who is our star broodmare at the moment, Dam of Liam's Map, Dam of Not This Time. We know that she has tremendous residual value as a broodmare. Because of that, you know, her value is never going to be higher. We're going to make the difficult decision to sell this filly, you know, in order to take the money and go out and reinvest in classic colts, because we're chasing that dream. And that's exactly what they did, partnering up with Spendthrift Farm, who, of course, stands their Grade 1 winner Brody's Cause, will stand their Grade 1 winner Free Drop Billy. The two of them deepening the partnership that way, as Spendthrift, you know, perhaps looks toward those future stallions. And, yeah, I did expect some of the partnerships, you know, the traditional racing syndicates like West Point, Starlight, Centennial, you know, to buy at a higher level this sale, you know, perhaps to expand their credit limits. Of course, we've seen racing partnerships, you know, kind of gaining steam, and not that they weren't successful before, but garnering so many headlines at the moment with, you know, West Point owning a piece of Always Dreaming last year, Starlight owning a piece of Justified this year. And not only do their existing partners, you know, they win and they can't get enough of it, as Keeneland's Bob Ellison put it very eloquently. You know, you have new people saying, you know, hey, I want to be involved in this. So when those partnerships have additional demand, of course they're going to go out and up their credit limit and buy more horses and perhaps better horses to meet that demand. Starlight West, that group, Starlight Racing, expanding itself with the aim of putting a stable of classic horses with Bob Baffert, who, of course, trained Justify, for them in their partnership. And partnering up, and this is very interesting how the two groups converge, partnering up with SF Bloodstock. Now, SF, which is closely associated with Windstar, owned a share of the breeding rights to Justify when Windstar and China Horse Club, of course, went out and bought him as a yearling. SF sold their racing share in the colt to Starlight while maintaining their breeding share. So now SF and Starlight, you know, obviously having a close association with each other through that, going out and buying these horses, you know, again, with the aim of having a stable of classic-type horses for their partnership and for their breeding purposes.
I haven't seen anybody write about this question. Is the relationship, and maybe it's best asked of Jack Wolf, is the relationship based or constructed in a similar fashion in terms of Starlight handling the racing portion of these horses' careers, and if any potential bloodstock manifests itself, that's where SF comes in.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that those things too, and I'm sure they've discussed it amongst themselves, but I'm sure that those things too will, begin to play out as these horses get into training and begin their racing careers. Because of course, you know, partnerships can change and people can buy into horses as they, you know, begin to prove themselves out. Starlight's a good example, you know, buying into Justify and Audible earlier this year, making those deals with SF, Soul Cumin, another one out there who buys into horses as they prove themselves on the track for, you know, racing purposes only. Those are things that I'm sure have been discussed as these partnerships are forging themselves at the sale. But, you know, they're also things that are probably very fluid.
Well, the first 4 days flowed like wine, and now we turn to the meat and potatoes, as it were, tomorrow and Sunday, book two, Nicole, and let's get a feel for what we can expect and how much pushdown effect there's going to be from, you know, the heavy success in book one. How many people were denied the inventory building that they're going to do here, and what does it mean for the middle market? And this is also a chance for some of those other first crop stallions that we touched on, but they're going to have a lot more in these next couple of books. The Honor Codes, the Leams Map, Mr. Speaker, Tonalist, all of those for Lane's End, and Carpe Diem, and Commissioner, Constitution, Daredevil for Windstar, Byron for Hillendale. Mm-hmm. Going through the catalog, you know, you see a little wider diversity, and there still will be some of the headline stallions that have got horses in, including American Pharoah, quite notably, in book two. So we could still have plenty of fireworks yet.
Yeah. I think I do feel like, you know, from talking to some buyers, out on the sale grounds yesterday as they began scouting out the book two horses, I did get the sense that they feel some momentum is going to continue, precisely because of what you said, because with the competitive bidding, with the strength of the market, there were a lot of people who didn't get their orders filled. You know, buyers were saying, you know, I'm seeing so-and-so agent walk around who I don't think has been on the board yet. Barbara Benke told me that she hadn't, you know, purchased as many horses as she was expecting yet. She's going to continue shopping in books two and three. So I think, you know, you are going to see some of these heavy hitters getting, you know, pushed down into these markets. I do also think that we saw signs in book one that, you know, the middle market was there. You know, as I said, the improved median price, the, you know, buyback rate that was improved a couple of ticks, those are signs of the presence of a solid middle market as well. And as you said, I think there's a lot of, you know, quality stocks still to come here, looking at some of the sires, looking at some of the mares here, you know, with siblings and half-siblings to some of their state performers. I do think you get the sense that, you know, the momentum is going to continue.
Any big names, any big hips that haven't seen your book two, hips to watch yet? Who should people be aware of going into tomorrow?
You know, I'll have to take a closer look through, but I know a couple of the things that jumped out at me were, you know, there are a handful of yearlings by Snapit still remaining, a handful by American Pharoah, as you said, including he's got one, I believe, coming up in book two, who's a half-brother to Secret Circle, a fellow first crop yearling sire of this year.
Yeah.
Secret Circle, really, I think, a little bit of an underrated racehorse. His career was, you know, interrupted time and again by some setbacks. He always came back swinging, won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Sprint, and then as an older horse, won the Breeders' Cup Sprint. Very, you know, tough, you know, just very classy racehorse, who probably, you know, could have been even better if he hadn't had those setbacks. So American Pharoah's got a half-sibling to that horse in the sale. Further on a little bit, I think in book three, American Pharoah actually has a half-sister to Hootenanny in the sale, Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf winner, who was so good traveling internationally for Wesley Ward. You know, those are a couple. And then Stone Street, as I said, they continue to play the game both buying and selling. They're actually selling a Bernardini colt, who's the first foal out of Samantha Nicole, a foal sister to Rachel Alexandra. Mm. And, of course, it's been well chronicled, you know, Rachel Alexandra, what could have been for her as a broodmare if she hadn't had those complications that, you know, led Stone Street to effectively pension her. Both of her foals on the track were winners. That includes, of course, Rachel's Valentina by Bernardini, who is a grade one winner as a two-year-old. So I'm really curious to get a look at this horse and to see if, you know, that family success can continue. I mean, even if Samantha Nicole was not as accomplished on the racetrack, of course, you know, genetically, this cross is, you know, this cross is one that's worked. It's the same genetic material.
Well, and didn't we had what we had the Lotta Kim? We had the Lotta Kim sibling or the Lotta Kim baby. Mm-hmm. I think RNA'd, right?
Yes.
Day one.
Yes.
So we'll be looking forward to the book two results. Tomorrow things pick up and we return to the normal start time, right? Do we get back to...
Yes, a 10 a.m. start for the rest of the sale, which runs through September 23rd.
Well, and that'll keep you busy, obviously, for the next 9 days. Nicole, I appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll check in probably maybe after book three.
Thanks, Steve.
Nicole Russo, who, as you can tell, just sharp as can be, and her coverage, outstanding. Follow her, DRF Russo, R-U-S-S-O. Ed DeRosa is going to follow Nicole Russo right now after we take a break. And we've had a busy morning. It's flown by, and now we're, as usual, we're in trouble. So I've got to get the hammer, too, somehow. But let's go to Toronto, and we'll pick up Ed DeRosa, who's up for the Woodbine Mile. I think this is maybe the third or fourth year in a row he's gone up there. He was there when I went 2 years ago, right? We'll find out. Ed DeRosa next.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, the roof is leaking and the rain's falling on my head. It won't stop. The roof is leaking and the rain's falling on my head. I need a mop. I cry so hard, teardrops on my. She packed up her bags and she moved out on a midnight train. Got no brain. She packed up her bags and she moved out on a midnight train. The girl's insane. She took my heart. Tears rolling down my drain. Just like rain. Tell you about it. My buddy come to see me to give me a tip, tip, tip. I said, now listen here, friend. I tell you I'm hip. Why don't you mind your own business? Shut your lip, lip, lip. I know when my girl give me the slip, slip, slip. I said the roof is leaking.
We're back at the races. 20 minutes, Dion. And I got to tell you, I had never heard this version. I'd heard the Drifters original. And this turned up at the end of Ozark Season 2. Tina and I, we waited all summer for season two of Ozark, and it wasn't as good as season one, I'll tell you that. It was okay. It was just fair. But that closed the last episode 10 of season two of Ozark, and I was like stunned. I'm a big Dion fan, and this comes with the Del Satins, not with the Belmonts, and I had to have it. We gotta get it on. So that's where that comes from. And yeah, you could, if you liked Ozark season one, season two, it's okay. Ed DeRosa is back in Toronto, and no trouble at the border. Ed, they let you come straight through.
They let me come through. I'm hoping for some trouble getting back because I have that $10,000 threshold where you got to declare your cash. That's the kind of trouble I want.
I love it. Well, that means you can win up to what, 13,800, give or take.
That's right.
The Canadian dollar is right now. That's great. That was always one of my favorite questions all the years, my 10 years in Montreal. Are you carrying more than 10,000 in cash? No. No. No, I'm not. It's pretty funny. Good luck with that. And, of course, there is the opportunity. Keith McCallum was on with us earlier. And I had completely lost track of that jackpot they've got on their high five. And there's a mandatory payout tomorrow in that 12th race.
Yeah, and it's a pretty thing. You know, they put it there for a reason, or selected that race for the 12th for a reason. I haven't fully dug in because given the stakes, most of my attention. But it does seem like the type of race where there's probably two horses I'm going to lean on that have to be in the top three or four, depending on how many others I like. And as we've seen time again, and we'll talk about it with these stakes races, with the full fields and the two-year-old races this weekend, you know, even with strong opinions that other people share, when you get those 12, 14 horse fields, the superfecta and the super high five just really give an opportunity to blow up with one good long shot opinion. So that's in the back of my mind as I get to the super high five. But the two Derby Oaks and Points races, and then the win and you're in races Sunday, the grade one, must play vertically for me with the full field.
Well, let's dive in then. Give us some thoughts. We got about 10 minutes.
All right. Well, really excited to kick off the Road to the Derby in Oaks. As those who follow me on social media know, it's never too early for me. And we have our top 10 updated. More novelty at this point, I'm happy to admit. But always fun to try to pick horses and follow them along. And gets going in earnest with the Iroquois. And really both races, I have a pretty similar approach. I think the favorites in both look pretty formidable, and then my plan is I have one key horse who I expect to be in the 8 to 10 to 1 range that hopefully will get in the number. The Iroquois tight 10 I do like, has the win at Churchill, should have no problem with the 8.5 being by Tappet, and really wants Steve Asmussen to get off the point stuck early. Shocking that he didn't win a points race last year. The ebbs and flows of training, people think it's easy, and these grade ones just, you know, get handed to guys like Brown and Asmussen, and even the best suffer the variance. And I think it turns around for Steve this year, and hopefully he can get a win right away with tight 10 or Tobacco Road. Both look good, but the price I like is Royal Earn, who I thought, watching the replay, I didn't see it live being from Gulfstream, but basically was behind a loose leader who backed through the field, and then Royal Earn just took complete command. I see it as a big confidence that Michelle Nei ships in for this. The jockey comes in as well. I think that's the horse that can maybe upset a few of the others behind tight turn in the Iroquois.
All right. Pocahontas.
Moving on to the Pocahontas. As I said, I do like the favorites in both races. Serengeti Empress, I remember talking about going into Ellis, fastest maiden winner thus far at Indiana Grand, and we've seen some of those horses come back and run well elsewhere. Rare Form was second in the Arlington Futurity, her stablemate. I definitely think she's the one to beat here, keeping Lannery. Taylor Spirit is the one I'm interested in. It may be a price underneath. Has wins on both surfaces, has a two-turn win at Louisiana Downs. It's just crushed the competition. Yeah, this is a step up, but I definitely think for the minors, she absolutely fits at 10 to 1 or so. So Taylor Spirit, the one to get in the number in the Pocahontas.
All right.
And then shifting the focus to Woodbine, what a card on Saturday. I've been up here a few times now and been following Woodbine a lot since I started at Twin Spires. And top to bottom, they got this one right. The pieces really fell into place, and the weather looks to be cooperating as well. So really excited for the card. The stakes action starts a little earlier, but the graded stakes action, the Woodbine Mile, And I'm really torn on how much to lean on Oscar performance. I definitely think a mile up his alley. The poker was a huge effort. If you think it took just too much out of him and what we saw in the million was a result of that, he's really tough to like here, even if he's not the favorite. We won't be the favorite, but even at 4-1, if you just think that he's completely off, then he's tough to use. So I'm trepidatious, but I don't like the Europeans after the travel situation. Stormy Antarctic looks like he prefers softer ground, definitely going to be firm here. And then Lord Glitters needs pace, which isn't an issue because one of the horses I do like to visit, Darrow, I think can close against this group at a one-turn mile. But I just worry about the travel, dulling that kick, and how much training he missed this week might be a concern with his running style. So I'm between Oscar Performance and Divisadero in the Woodbine Mile. And it's just the type of race, Delta Prince, I can't take as the favorite. This is just, it's too competitive a group with no standout.
Fair enough. You know, it's funny you bring up Divisadero, who I did not talk about at all yet. And the more I look, the more I realize that he is competitive in here. There's not a ton of pace. That's one of the issues that he and Good Samaritan are facing. And it's a fun race. I mean, I think the Northern Dancer is the most compelling group, top to bottom. But Woodbine Mile starts off the cross country pick four and the all stakes pick four. Press forward.
Yep, pressing forward in that all stakes pick four. Canadian. I do think New Money Honey is the most likely winner, but you know, we're getting in a spot with her and Oscar Performance, as we'll get to in the next race. For 20 cents, we don't want to pick four that's going to pay 10 bucks. So definitely looking to get creative in the other legs with the favorites. And I thought Hallie Bell was interesting, getting 9 furlongs for the first time. Now, she has been beyond 9 furlongs and ran okay, but this is the first time at the straight 9, and with Medaglia d'Oro, the breeding just seems like this will be a little better than the mile and a 16th. She's been done, and she gets the local jock for great connections, Stidham for Godolphin. So I'm definitely taking a look to the outside in the Canadian.
All right.
And then Pink Lloyd, you know, you know the name. Everyone knows him here. He's actually probably a horse who gets bet based on name among the locals, a horse you'd love to beat. I had a hard time making a case for a horse against him, but if I got to a point, and maybe I'll use this horse, is definitely a B. But at 20-1 on the morning line, loose on the town, is the only other horse in the field with a triple-digit Brisnet speed rating. Second time off the layoff for the new trainer. Gets back with Javier, who's ridden this horse before. Definitely not impossible. Has the numbers that could be competitive with Pink Lloyd. If I'm going to go against the 3-5, I'm really going to swing in this one, and Loose on the Town would be my choice.
I'm glad you keyed in, and I'm intrigued by his presence in here. It's funny. I don't know if he can win, but he's the right price, and you know, Doyle certainly knows what he's doing, and you get Castellano, and the price is certainly right. Icarin Road too is the other one that makes some sense underneath if you're looking to build a try or super ticket.
Certainly. And then the Northern Dancer closes out the pick four you mentioned and leads into that double that ends with the mandatory super high five. I like Patterson Cross, the 119 weight against others carrying 123 and 126, I see as a definite benefit as a horse who's going to be trying to run him down late. I like the price. I think the favorites in here, you know, Hawkbill, who we saw just get pipped last year. I mean, he's okay. He's the one to beat, but I just think he might be a lean for, and especially anyone trying to beat Pink Lloyd, he might be the one they lean on. And I'm just not going to go in that direction. I thought Patterson Cross looked interesting at the price. And then Mechtal is the other closer. I do think this one could set up for a closer, and Mectel is going to save a lot of ground, and the price is a little more suppressed, which is why Patterson crossed a little better, but I'm going to use them both.
Yeah, Mectel to me is has got a big look for a lot of perspectives. Nice.
Do I have time for the grade ones on Sunday?
Yeah, real quick, because I want to get a Presque Isle conversation.
Not too sexy in the male race. I think it goes through the Philly race. My Gal Betty and Stillwater Cove. They're the ones to beat. And then Fog of Fear? I can't read my writing. Fog of Here?
Fog of War.
Chad Brown horse.
Fog of War.
Oh, thank you. Fog of War. Man, that's terrible writing. electrifying closing kick and horses who, two-year-olds who sprint like that and close in sub 6 seconds are going to catch my attention. So very competitive, both races. So these are more keys, like I said. I think they're must-play superfectas. You just get so much value in races with 12-plus horses versus supers with 8 to 10. It's a pool that I really want to be active in on Sunday.
Nice. No, it's a terrific weekend at Woodbine. Are you staying, or do you have to go back Sunday?
No, I planned it. Got in yesterday and heading out Monday. So, yeah, I'm here for the big ones.
Oh, good. All right. So EJ XD2 for lots of coverage of the Woodbine weekend, and he'll be keeping an eye on Churchill undoubtedly tomorrow with a superb card. Some good maiden races, too, I talked about with Marty earlier today. Ed, have a great time up there.
Will do. Have fun, everyone.
Ed DeRosa, EJXD2, and, of course, all the action at Twin Spires on the blog roll as well. Vance, and I know James was taping some videos this morning. That's why he couldn't be with us. And, of course, Nick Tamaro was traveling this morning on his way to Toronto to take part in the contest. So we'll wish everybody the best of luck. We got about 2 minutes. Got a couple of quick things to note. Didn't get to Hammer. He was hiking last week, so I apologize, Rick, but we'll key in for the start of the Santa Anita meet after Los Al wraps up, and Los Al has that Barrett's debutante, all the Barrett's purchases on Saturday, and then they've got a fascinating the Los Al special, a mile and a quarter for $100,000, and it got a really good field. Kind of fun that they conceived of this, a mile and a quarter on the elongated course, kind of interesting. They start down the stretch and they go all the way around. So this should be entertaining. That's what's going on there. I mentioned Presque Isle and the big weekend. I told you the other day when Dick was here, I can't be with you on Monday. We'll give you a best of on Monday, so we won't be able to talk about the Masters, but it came up terrific, and the card Monday at Presque Isle is outstanding, highlighted by the Grade 2 Masters, and certainly you look at this Hotshot Anna coming out of the Satin and Lace. I mean, she feels, you know, very much the filly to beat. However, Amiz Mesa coming back down, and Josie Carroll been tuning her up, and that includes with a 7-furlong work 10 days ago at Woodbine, and you know, Amiz Mesa, you know, coming out of the win last year with Bar of Gold behind her. Is it possible that Amiz Mesa and Hotshot Anna lead us into the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint? Yeah, it is. Absolutely. But there's other considerations here. Mrs. Weber, Let It Ride Mom is 10-1. How about Code Warrior? I know DePaulo, he's got her cross-entered. It'll be interesting to see what he does. Something tells me that they'll show up here. There is enough pace, though. I don't know. That's interesting, actually. We'll see what he's going to do there. Crazy Sweet, Glenn Wismer. She was second behind Hotshot Anna. Suge sends up Browse and gets Flavian Pratt. And, of course, on Sunday, you got the Mrs. Paxson as well as the Mile. So, Sunday, Monday, get involved at Presque Isle, and Dick's selections are at PresqueIsleDowns.com. Should be a tremendous weekend. I will talk to you Tuesday. We'll wish a safe trip to Rafi, to our Philly today. I was hoping to get down to Belmont, but I can't. And so I'll watch from afar. Safe trip for Raj and Minute Mouse. Get her going. She's stuck outside. It's going to be tough from the 12th. Safe trip. And then Sunday, I'd love to go to Boston. We're running at Suffolk with just enough hope. It should be fun, but I got to go to Rochester. So I'm hard-pressed. Got two runners, and we can't. I don't think we're going to be able to go to either race. But thanks to Gary and Paul and the staff, and good luck to everybody, the partners, Tony and Hope, and everybody today with Minute Mouse. Have a great weekend. Good luck. Talk to you Tuesday.
The latest racing news. It's At The Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfertello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.